Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country without power, doing it from a car, but that's okay. We keep the show going one way or another. It's a Breaking It Down podcast hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 30 minutes goes by quick. I understand that. Catch the archive, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, my special guest today, boy, I'm excited. We're going to have her back here again after this one because it's just going to be so good. It's so in-depth. Kimberly Resnick Anderson, a certified sex therapist. Kim, how are you this morning?
I am glad I survived Hurricane Hillary.
Yeah. You and I both, no power here. You have leaks in your place, so we're both in the same qualm of stuff. So, yeah, that's definitely whether you have to do it from a car or not, it always helps. Hey, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you as well.
People can reach me through my website, which is just my name, KimberlyResnickAnderson.com, or they can call 818-334-5811. I do provide free 15-minute phone consultations, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that any of your listeners have relating to sexuality.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when we start into this, people think, you know, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, sex therapists, wow, is this somebody that's going to help me and my wife at the same time or stuff like that? I'm sure you've heard everything in all the years you've done this.
Oh,
but
yes.
This is not, this is not one of these things
every
where
you, week.
Yeah. This is definitely not one of these things where you take off the clothes and everything and you sit with the couple. Tell us a little about how you got into this. I think it's extraordinary, the experience and everything that you've accomplished in it. This is a subject that, you know, maybe a lot of people are afraid to ask, but they've always wanted to know.
Absolutely, Mark. Probably daily, or certainly weekly, someone will share something with me that they've never spoken out loud, that they've never shared with another soul in their entire life. That is a privilege and an honor that I take very seriously. Go ahead.
And I'm sure that's dearly to your heart because they're trusting you with everything coming out of their soul to tell you what's going on. So that's something you take pretty much to the grave.
Yep, and it's liberating, too, for my patients who have had a secret or have an interest or an arousal template or some kind of erotic fantasy that they have had a lot of conflict about or have held as a shameful part of their identity for decades. And so sometimes just saying it out loud can move people to weep.
Right, right. Now, when you look at marriages, and I realize 30 minutes is going to go quick, but we can elaborate on this subject, sexless marriages. What ends up happening is people end up being married 20, 30, 40 years, and I don't know what the percentage is, but I would imagine the sex starts to go. I don't know if it's more the female aspect of it or more the male aspect of it, but you see that going, and then it just becomes almost like a roommate kind of partnership. Take us through that with the sexless marriages as far as how do they – what ends up happening? What's the drawback of these things? Is there a silver lining to this down the line? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Those are great questions. Well, let me just start by saying I've been a sex therapist for 30 years, and I've been helping couples in sexless marriages for that entire 30 years. But I have noticed some changes and some shifts in what the barriers are, and I've also noticed changes around the age of the couples that are seeking treatment. So when I started this work in the very early 90s, it was older couples, I'd say 45 to 50 and up, who were coming in wanting help with low sex or no sex marriages. Now it's actually millennials that are the primary demographic that reach out to me for help with not having sexual relations in their marriage. So that's really fascinating too. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But let me tell you just a little bit about sexless marriages and what constitutes a sexless marriage, and also its counterpart, low sex marriages. Because I think there are more couples in low sex marriages than there are in actual sexless marriages. And I'll explain what I mean by that. There are about 20 million couples in America who are in sexless marriages. And the way we measure that is if you have sex 10 or less times per year. So you don't have to be in an absolute sexless marriage to qualify, but because you could have sex 6 or 7 times a year and still technically fit into the category of sexless marriage. A low sex marriage would be a couple who engages in sexual contact from 10 to 25 times per year. So there are another 20 million in that category. So between the sexless and the low sex marriages, we have about 40 million American couples times 2, that's 80 million people. That's quite a lot of people not swinging from the chandeliers.
Yeah. And now when you break the sexless marriages down, not to make light of this thing, is this strictly not intercourse? Is it intercourse, or is it just somebody playing with the other one's parts and then that's considered sex for the person? And is
That's such a good question, because people will come in and say they haven't had penetrative intercourse in 4 years, but they have had oral or manual stimulation. Sometimes people will come in and say they haven't had penetrative intercourse due to some sort of, chronic illness or pain condition, some sort of pelvic pain or something related to a medical problem. So they're not able to have penetrative sex, but they can have other means of stimulation that are pleasurable. And I do consider oral and manual stimulation sex. In my book, most of the people that come and see me have literally zero sexual expression as a couple. Zero, nothing. They haven't touched each other's genitals. They haven't often even seen each other naked for years or decades sometimes.
Well, and the question is why? I mean, there should be things to stimulate that, whether it's toys, movies, whatever. Books, magazines, there's got to be something to stimulate it, because it just doesn't fall off a cliff overnight. There's got to be something that leads to it. Is there resentment? Has somebody been cheating on somebody? Has somebody, grown apart from each other? I mean, now they're working with a coworker they like. I mean, there's got to be something there that drives this thing definitely off
That's
the
right.
cliff.
That's right. So there are many complex and varied reasons why couples stop sharing their sexuality with one another. And I just want to make it clear that just because you don't want to have sex with your partner doesn't mean you don't have libido. It just means you don't have libido that translates to your partner, right? So many of the couples I see are horny, just not for their husband or wife. So I want to just make sure everyone understands that being in a sexless marriage doesn't mean you necessarily lack sexual desire or libido. It means you lack the motivation to share that with your primary partner. In fact, a lot of the people I see in sexless marriages have active masturbation lives, or are having sex with other people. So don't equate low sex or no sex in a relationship with a lack of intrinsic libido, Mark. That's an important distinction.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, Kim, when you bring up some interesting points, because men, even at 61, great shape and everything, I could still wake up with the morning wood. So it's, I don't know if that's good health. I don't know what I attribute to
health.
You, but...
That's a very good sign for your overall health. I like to say the penis is a dipstick of overall health.
Right. So the health there would be the thing there. Now, on the other side of that coin with women, do women start to lose the sex drive as they get older, into their 50s, 60s? You know, does it peter off a little, where menopause and all that? Is one greater than the other, or there's just women on that side of the coin that can outnumber their male counterpart?
Well, again, these are great questions. Men have 10 times more testosterone than women at all stages of life.
Right.
So even women who are comfortably perimenopause, or, you know, long before they're approaching menopause, men still have the hormonal advantage. So it's not apples and oranges. We're not starting with equal hormonally motivated desire, okay? I want to make sure everyone understands that. So even at age 25, you know, a man is going to have significantly more testosterone. Testosterone is like the foot on the gas of the sexual car, if you will. So once women go through menopause, the discrepancy becomes even greater, Mark. There was already a 10-to-1 ratio or an 8-to-1 ratio. Now the gap is even more significant. And with that come other symptoms like hot flashes or night sweats or irritability. And so women aren't just depleted of estrogen and testosterone, but they tend to feel bloated, gain more weight, feel less sexy. And also some women who are no longer, able to reproduce, that can impact their sense of femininity and sexual self-esteem. But that's not the main reason why my couples aren't having sex. Menopause may be a chunk, but there are so many other reasons that are at play.
Right. Now, what about hysterectomy on a woman? When she has a hysterectomy.
Yeah. Hysterectomy,
because I'm looking at hysterectomy. When a woman gets her hysterectomy, I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe she now doesn't feel like a woman because you're losing that most important part. Does that play into a lot of these things too?
Absolutely. Hysterectomy, especially if it's premature, so before the age that menopause would happen naturally, and so that is a big loss. And then just even natural aging, when you go through menopause organically, that also can feel like a loss of femininity. Although some women enjoy there are some benefits of menopause. I don't want to suggest that all women are grieving over menopause. Some women enjoy not having to worry about their period or other symptoms associated. But yes, from a hormonal perspective and a psychological perspective, menopause and chemical menopause certainly undermines libido.
Right. Now, and still staying on the sexless marriage part, because there's so much to talk about with you and you're breaking it down perfectly. A lot of the turnoffs could be, a lot of men think of themselves. So very rarely, you know, after a while, do they think about pleasure in the woman? It takes a while to do that. So it's like, wham, bam, thank you, man. I'm horny. I got to release it. And then it's a rollover thing, or I got to go shower and go to work now. The other point of that, too, is, there's some women that'll service the man where, you know, if he's serviced, we're not going to worry about him going out in the corporate world today. He's going to be well taken care of. He's coming home to see me again. Those things can run hand in hand to a certain extent, correct?
Correct, except now that more and more women are in the workforce and women are out earning men have a new level of vulnerability around being cheated on by their female partners. In fact, men and women cheat in equal numbers, but for different reasons. So I don't want to move away from sexless marriage and talk about infidelity, but I sure hope we can cover that on another episode, Mark.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a good one, infidelity. And when you look at that whole thing, I want to get into the 30 years, how you got into this, because I think it's extraordinary, Kim. You know, a sex therapist for 30 years, and to hear all the catcalls and everything like that, how did you just stay focused? And I've always said staying focused for me in anything I do is put the earplugs in the ears, get the ice in the veins, and look at negativity like pylons on a highway. How did you stay focused on this type of extraordinary adventure that you wanted to call it a career?
Well, I was really interested in relational dynamics from a young age. There's a lot of mental health providers in my family. And I was particularly compelled by things like who's faithful and who isn't and why do some couples stay together and other couples divorce, and just growing up seeing all the mixed messages around sexuality in our culture, right? Sex is good, sex is bad, sex is hot, sex is dirty, all these different competing messages,
right,
and mixed signals I found to be really silly and unnecessary, and just even as a kid and then a teenager and young adult, I was just fascinated by the role of sexuality in our culture. So I decided to go to graduate school with a specific interest and focus around human sexuality, and I tailored my coursework as much as possible so that all the research I was doing and all the papers I was writing had something to do with human sexuality. Then I completed a 5-year postgraduate fellowship in sexuality at a private sex clinic in the Cleveland, Ohio area, which was affiliated with a hospital. And 30 years later, I am still as interested in the role of sexuality in our society as I was then, if not more interested.
And now let me ask you, there's always somebody when you go into a career, there's always somebody that was instrumental in your life. Besides maybe your parents, was there anybody instrumental in your life that you said, you know what, I want to go down this career path? And I'm sure, you know, dealing with the opposite sex of this thing, it was kind of like, you know, snickering and stuff like that, being a woman, but staying focused on this. Any mentors that you kind of, you know, pattern yourself going through this whole field?
Well, a couple, actually. My dad is a psychiatrist, forensic psychiatrist, and he testified in a lot of murder trials, of serial murders, mass murderers, mothers who killed their children, but also evaluated lots of rapists and child molesters. And so the dark side of sexuality and human nature was certainly front and center. So I would hear my father dictating, you know, murder and rape cases as I went to sleep at night. We call it lullabies of murder. But outside of family, I would say that Dr. Ruth Westheimer was sort of my hero. And
yeah.
Was able to meet her and speak at a conference with her in Sweden in 2011. And there's a picture of me and Ruth together on my shelf right across the way from where I'm speaking with you right now.
Wow. Yeah, very, you know, and when you look at the bar and to be a part of that, I mean, that had to be special with Dr. Ruth Westheimer. I definitely remember her and her show, too, discussing all of that.
Yeah, I remember listening to her show in the 80s when I was in college, undergraduate school, on the radio and thinking, this is so cool. I want to do this. And here I am.
You know, I want to take two more subjects, and hopefully we can take these and before we wrap it up, because I know the infidelity will continue in that one next week. But with the sexless marriages, we I think this runs hand in hand, is the masturbation. And some people might think, well, this is not normal. This is you just don't do this. But masturbation is not more or less a sickness. It's just releasing something that ain't there in your life, I would imagine. Am I correct on that, Kim?
You are correct. masturbation is a healthy, protective outlet and not inherently problematic. Now, there can be problematic aspects of masturbation. Overwhelmingly, most people masturbate responsibly. But I do work with men who engage in what are called out-of-control sexual behaviors. One might have heard the term sex addiction or sexually compulsive. So I do treat men who are so sexually preoccupied that it interferes with their work or their sleep or other aspects of their lives in a way that can be very damaging.
Right. And when you look at masturbation for a man, depending on how old you are, if you're young, you'll left and right. But if you're older, a couple hours to reload the cannon in some ways. But I mean, when it gets to be too compulsive, are we going over three a day? Is this 4 to 5 a day, 6 a day, or is it just Pornhub and all this other stuff as far as that goes?
So there's no hard and fast rules. I'm less interested in the quantity than I am in the role it is playing in the patient's life, whether it's interfering with their daily activities, whether they're masturbating so often that they don't have any libido left for their partner, if they masturbate so often that they become dependent on their own hand and the pressure and stimulation can't be simulated through a sexual act with another person, or if they become dependent on the images in porn to where so-called vanilla sex doesn't get their juices flowing sufficiently to where they can achieve and maintain an erection or have an orgasm.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Now, you're also a sex education expert for Pornhub. Talk a little about that.
Do you work for Pornhub? I also am an assistant professor of psychiatry at UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine, where I teach medical students how to discuss sexual issues with their patients and take a sexual history. In terms of Pornhub, they reached out to me to ask if I would be willing to make a series of sex education videos, and I was thrilled to do so. The funny thing is that when I told my kids I was going to be on Pornhub, I think it took them a minute to kind of figure that one out. My husband likes to joke, my wife's on Pornhub. It's in a professional and
right.
But we get a good laugh out of that.
Yeah, and that's going to be a feather in your cap. I know it's an adult video thing, and people might look at it different, but to be on something like that and for somebody to reach out and say, hey, we'd like you to contribute on this, that's like sitting in the backyard with a nice cold drink and lighting up a cigar and saying, you know what, I've come a long way.
Aw, I like that analogy. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome on that one. But, when you look at things and when they start to come your way, hard work to me never goes unnoticed. It might take a while, but it'll get noticed. And a lot of people look at goals in life and they figure, God, I can't hit my goal. Well, it's a journey, and how you contribute to that journey will get you to the goal, and it depends on how quick you'll get to the goal.
Right, and I also think how passionate you are about it. And how tenacious you are. My focus has been laser focused for the last, 35, nearly 40 years on educating people around sexuality, understanding it better myself, helping people explore their own erotic life, understand the legacy and impact of their sexual history. These are things I just feel are so beneficial. And because of the taboos in our culture and the legacy of our Puritan roots, it's just not something that individuals and couples feel free to explore. In fact, so many of the couples that I treat, and I've treated thousands of couples, have never had a conversation about their sexual preferences or fantasies or expectations. They have sex, but they've never spoken about sex. And so one thing I do is just help couples communicate about sex. I had a couple here in my office yesterday, and they're newlyweds, and, you know, they don't know anything about each other's arousal templates. So we sat here, and I facilitated a dialogue, and it was very fruitful and very liberating for them. So I just throw all the stigma out the door, and I tell people, look, you know, I'm here to help you. I want you to have a satisfying sex life together and individually. So tell me what you want to know. Tell me what you don't know, and I'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah, that's a whole subject with infidelity and fantasies and everything, because people can snicker at that one too. But if they have fantasies and they're telling it to their partner and the partner's blowing it off, then obviously vice versa, they're telling you something. Hey, in the last 3 minutes.
That's another pathway. Yeah, I was just going to say really quickly. That's another pathway to sexless marriage is shame. Someone discloses something thinking it's safe to share, and their partner may be disgusted or lose respect for them. And then either one of them, as a result, may not feel comfortable sharing their sexuality with each other. You know, we didn't really get a chance to talk about the dozens and dozens and dozens of potential barriers to sexuality that lead to sexless marriages, but maybe we can have a part two, Mark.
Oh, definitely have a part two, maybe even a part three. I like these weekly things with you as far as keeping these things going, keeping the flame burning across the country. Hey, real fast, as we're down in the last 3 minutes and so change, let everybody know about this podcast you got, because I think it's extraordinary. I was listening to one of them, and I said to myself, wow, she's got this thing down, and no, but I'm looking at you now on the bar with Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Aw, thank you. I do have a podcast. I only produced one season. I hope to be adding some seasons in the near future, but it's called Sex Savvy, S-E-X-S-A-V-V-Y. And on my podcast, I explore a wide range of sexual health topics, from erectile dysfunction and orgasm concerns to necrophilia and fetishes and paraphilia and BDSM and so many very, very interesting and strange aspects of sexuality. And I don't say strange in a judgmental way, just strange as in unconventional, that people may not be aware even exists. So I would encourage people to listen to it. It's very informative. There's one particular episode that has a trigger warning, so make sure you listen before you push play. That particular episode has a lot of upsetting material around child torture, necrophilia, and murder. That's an episode where I interviewed my dad. But all the other episodes are pretty easy to listen to, and quite informative, and actually funny a lot of the time.
Well, I can't wait to hear that one. And it's amazing the background you have and what you've accomplished so far. I can't wait to do this again next week, maybe with infidelity, fetishes, and swinging and all that. We'll get into some of that stuff if we have time. I mean, these things take time to dissect. This thing doesn't get done in 5 minutes, and it's hard to compromise everything or condense it into a short period of time. But Kimberly, I appreciate your time, and man, oh man, I'm so blessed to do these things with you. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and listen to your podcast too.
Sure. So again, you can access me through my website, which is just my name, KimberlyResnickAnderson.com. You can find my podcast, Sex Savvy, on any podcast app. You'll find it anywhere you enjoy your other podcasts. And you can give me a call at 818-334-5811. On my website, I have a lot of free content. I have got videos, and blogs and links to more than 100 or so articles that I've been quoted in. So lots of great free content on there for people who are interested in getting a deeper sense of the type of stuff that I do here in California.
Well, she's a straw that stirs a drink on this podcast today. For Kimberly Resnick Anderson, taking care of the leaks in her place, I'm Mark Mancini, trying to get the power back on. We'll catch this episode on Blog Talk Radio, / Mancini Sports Podcast Platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. Kim, thank you so much. I can't wait for next week.
Mark, you are the best. Thank you so much for reaching out to me. Look forward to working with
you.
Well,
I'll always say this. I'm just a piece of a big puzzle here, and so blessed to do this each and every week. And, I'm looking forward to doing these things with you and getting it out there and getting it across the country.
Thanks for educating people on sexual health.
No problem. That's Kim. Yours truly, Mark Mancini. Have a good one. Thanks for tuning in.